is, what you gonna do?
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
I'm definitely using that sound effect.
Good. I just realized my window's wide open. So just everybody's
leave it open. Leave it open. Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone. What are we doing? Listen, guys. We're so excited.
Welcome.
It's a brand new miniseries.
Well,
you were gonna
it's a miniseries sequel.
Yeah.
It's a miniseries sequel. Welcome to Worst Cops Ever 2.
Worst Cops Ever 2!
Yeah. It's funny. When we did Worst Cops 1, presented by John Ryman, of course,
yep.
As is this one.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. Thank you from the bottom of my dangerously swollen heart.
From the bottom of my neon 1995 Florida Marlins fanny pack.
Yes. And when we were saying that we were going to do Worst Cops, I think we put out the logo first.
Yeah.
And people started guessing what it would be. And one of the guesses was the Bad Boys movies.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And yeah. And it wasn't that. It was Lethal Weapon.
No, it was the Lethal Weapon series the first time.
Yeah. But then John was like, you know what? Let's take a swing at Bad Boys 2. And the timing couldn't be more perfect, folks. Because you're getting this on Saturday, the Saturday before Bad Boys 3 comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be covering Bad Boys 1.
Yes.
Next week, we're going to be covering Bad Boys 2.
What? We are?
We are.
Oh, wow. How did that work
out? Bad Boys 1 and 2, mm-hmm. right in time for Bad Boys for Life. And then I imagine our We Just Watched will be for Bad Boys 3 that Monday.
It's going to be a lot of Bad Boys content.
So there you have it.
Mm-hmm. We're going all
unless
in.
Unless we die. Yeah.
Which is possible. Unless we're killed in a random act of police aggression as we're minding our own business. Unless we get hit by a $150,000 sports car or shot with a machine gun while we're trying to eat at a restaurant in Miami.
Right. And then our corpses are used to smuggle drugs and throw it out of a hearse. But we'll get to that. That's
we'll
not
that.
This movie.
Well, that's Bad Boys Do.
Yeah, we're on Bad Boys 1.
Bad Boys the first.
I believe Michael Bay's first movie.
That's correct. It is Michael Bay's first film.
And he, man, out of the gate with...
He's Michael Bay out of the gate.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love this movie,
I do,
Tom.
Too. I unironically love Bad Boys.
Yep, both of them. Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, their charisma... their rapport with each other.
They're great together.
They're fucking great.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a Michael Bay film, so.
There's problems.
Yes.
But there's some problematic shit.
Yes. But that's, I mean, it's tough because it's Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
These being his early movies, not nearly as much as I thought it would be.
I think there's two explanations for that. One is that the first Bad Boys is his very first film. So he still has to play it kind of, you know, safe, I guess.
Yeah. He has a...
Go ahead.
Oh, this movie has what is also later in Bad Boys 2, this weird Michael Bay racism where foreign characters don't know how to swear.
Yes.
It's a really weird thing Michael Bay does, and I don't understand it.
There's also, he'll have... We'll get into it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things to highlight about racism in these movies.
And then there's, you know, the women in a Michael Bay movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Although Taya Leone doesn't come off that badly.
No, again, because this is early Michael Bay.
It's early Michael Bay, yeah. So he hasn't quite been able to just become a little goblin and do whatever he wants to. The second reason I think that the Bad Boys movies are surprisingly not as problematic as you might expect, considering their age and who's behind the camera, is because by 2003, when Bad Boys 2 came out, Will Smith was Will Smith.
Right.
So, like, it has to be... I mean, it's still R-rated, but it has to be... Like, Will Smith has his own people. He's got his own writers. Yes. It has to be palatable to his image.
That said, I have a lot of respect for Will Smith in these films because Will Smith is very family-friendly most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he is not that in these.
No, he's the opposite of that. Yeah.
These are his R-rated movies where he's just like, I'm going to go nuts. Well,
And he's also like a womanizer and like, you know, he's kind of a sleazy dude.
He's kind of a jerk.
Right. He's a well-dressed sleaze.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, I think the only time he's done that is in Hancock.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's the reason why these movies aren't as bad as...
Yeah.
Man, they're not even as bad as the first Transformers movie. Like, the Transformers movies are, like, disgustingly racist and homophobic.
I think you nailed it with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence is that the fact that they... And I think Michael Bay might purposefully not do this anymore, and it's hurting his films, is that he used to have very big personalities
mm-hmm.
in his movies.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis, and of course, yeah, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence in this, Nicolas Cage and The Rock. And so I feel like these actors would bring something to the movies. Like, I got the feeling that a lot of this was improvised.
I know that for this first movie, because this is... sort of well known within the industry. Bad Boys was a script that was written, I think, 10 years prior. It was a script that had floated around for a while, and it was originally written for John Lovitz and Dana Carvey.
Right, which I still want to see that movie.
I want to see the version that version of this movie. Yes,
yes, but I want to see it exactly with the dialogue.
Well, that's what I was getting
from
to.
This
is that
movie.
Michael Bay had the sense to do two things. Well, one thing overall, Michael Bay had the good sense to stay the hell out of his two stars' way in these movies.
Yes.
Particularly in 95, because Martin Lawrence was an established movie star by 95. Will Smith was just getting started. But, I mean, that's why, like, bizarrely, Martin Lawrence's name comes before Will Smith in both of these movies.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like he was already dealing with people who had sort of more pull than he did, and also... He was able to recognize, oh, these guys just have great chemistry, so I shouldn't try to fuck with that. So
just step back.
He went to them with the dialogue, and it basically had them rework it, because he was like, okay, how would you guys say this? Like, get this, you know,
right.
How would you say these lines? Because these are written for, you know, John Lovitz and Dana Carvey, which is not
right.
Martin Lawrence and Will Smith.
Big help.
Brilliant decision.
It gives me hope for Bad Boys for Life, the third one.
Sure.
Because Michael Bay is not directing that one. And I would argue that he is the... all right, the action, yes. Michael Bay was a big part of the action of these films. But he's not why I like these films.
No, in point of fact, his... inserting himself even more, because by 2003, Will Smith was Will Smith, but Michael Bay was also Michael Bay.
Right.
So, like... Bad Boys, we'll discuss it, but Bad Boys 2 is kind of, it's famously overlong, and it's like loaded with these absurd action sequences. Like,
it has a fourth act.
Yeah. It's a movie. Yeah. I don't like it as much as I like the first one, and it's because it's too much Michael Bay. So it's like, honestly, if you were going to get rid of one part of the equation that made these movies, Michael Bay is the one to lose.
Yeah. You just need a good action director.
Yeah.
And then you get, because he didn't write them, right?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So you just get whoever wrote them, you get Martin Lawrence and Will Smith to add their flavor to it,
mm-hmm.
and you get someone who knows how to shoot action, and you're done.
Yeah. Really?
So,
especially this first one. This first one is primarily like a farce with some action sprinkled in, so it's like,
yeah.
Really all I need is to get these two actors back together and you know, throw in like one or two car chases and gunfights that are competently shot, and that's all I need.
Yeah, I mean the biggest shame to me about the Bad Boys franchise
mm-hmm.
Is that there isn't 20 of them.
Right, they went so long in between movies. There's an 8-year gap in between the first one and the second one.
Yeah,
and this third one is coming out 17 years after the second
fuck?
One. Yeah,
the fuck,
17 years.
Yeah.
Gracious.
So I guess let's get into the how they're monsters, huh?
Well, first we run through the plot real briefly.
Oh, is that what we do?
Yeah, that's what we do.
Okay. We can do that.
Yeah, we can do that. Do you want to do it or should I?
You're better at it.
Okay. Well, then I'll.
I want you to do it.
I'll take the wheels of this limited edition sports car that Will Smith
owns. I can do
owns.
The next one. I'll do the next Bad Boys.
I trust you to do Bad Boys too.
Yeah.
So Will Smith and Martin Lawrence play Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett, who are two narcotics detectives in Miami. There's a big heist involving a former police officer where this French guy named Fouché and a crew of bad guys break into the police station and steal like hundreds of millions of dollars of heroin from their lockup, from their evidence lockup.
Yes. So they shoot a hilarious dupe. The guy just has the cop who's like, yeah, I'm having a great time.
I'm the distraction.
Guys.
And then they just shotgun him in the chest and he goes flopping out into the street.
What did he think? What did he think
was
going to
happen? Right. Like he thought, I want to believe they gave him a whole script. Like, okay, you're going to walk in here. You're going to say these lines. You're going to do X, Y, Z. Like he had a whole plot that he'd rehearsed.
Right.
And they just fucking shoot him in the chest.
Yeah. He's just doing it for weed, too. Like, he's just, like, just some guy.
Oh, he looked like it. He looked like you could pay him in weed.
Oh, 100%.
Weed and chili dogs.
Yeah.
So Marcus and Mike are trying to get the drugs back. Mike asks a friend of his named Max, who is an escort, to sort of keep her ear to the ground because he's like, well, these guys just stole a huge amount of money and drugs, so odds are they're going to be spending this money. She runs afoul of the gangsters and they kill her, but she had brought her roommate friend along with her just because, for some reason.
Taya Leone.
Yeah, Taya Leone, the former Mrs. Duchovny.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her first movies too, I think, if not the first.
Yeah, I think so.
They don't realize she's there because she went upstairs to go to the bathroom and then she escapes and they're trying to hunt her down. And she calls the police station and will only speak to Mike because she heard from Max like what a good friend Mike was and that if she was ever in trouble, she would only trust Mike. But Mike's not there because he went out to investigate a lead and got his ass beat with a sledgehammer.
Sure did. It's very weird.
So their captain, who is Joey Pants, Joe Pantoliano. Joey Pants makes Marcus pretend to be Mike. So that they can get Taya Leone in to be their witness and, you know, help them crack the case. So most of the movie is a farce in which Marcus has to pretend to be Mike and juggle that with lying to
his
wife.
Plot.
Yeah, exactly. It's farcical. And then Will Smith has to pretend to be Marcus. And sprinkled in around there, they get into a lot of gunfights, a lot of car chases, many explosions. They eventually track the bad guys down to this hangar where they're selling all the heroin to what appears to be like a South American despot.
We don't really get to know him.
We have
very
no
long.
Idea who he is. Yeah. They break up the bust, fucking explode everything, and get into a car chase in two extremely expensive cars. I think one of them is a Porsche.
Yeah.
I think. I'm not a car guy, but they make a point of letting us know exactly how rare and expensive these cars are. And they look amazing as they drive, presumably 200 miles an hour down a jetway, or a runway, rather.
This is going to start a precedent for Michael Bay, which is I like getting very expensive cars and blowing them up.
And crashing them.
Yeah.
Although
you can't fault him for that.
Oh no, hell no. I think the one that crashes is probably a replica. That's usually how they do it.
Yeah, when I assume so. I assume by the Transformers films, the companies were just building the things for them, right?
They were probably probably building replicas for them, but yeah.
Yeah. Cuz Michael Bay by Transformers, they're basically car commercials too.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They
that's
clearly
true.
Worked something out with them.
But I don't Yeah, that's probably correct. But for like,
actually, now that I think about it, maybe by The Rock, because maybe by Bad, because it, there's a scene in Bad Boys 2 where they get in a car and they compliment the car. Like, I think he's been making car commercials for a while
for
now.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Bay is a grown-up little boy. He likes women in miniskirts. He likes machine guns. He likes fast, colorful sports cars.
Right.
And dudes being real macho. So yeah, they win the car chase. Fouché tries to escape. They shoot him in the leg. He does the classic. They're like, oh, we're not going to kill you. It's not worth it. Then he pulls another gun out. So they have to shoot him 900 times.
He does the classic Alan Alda in Murder at 1600.
Yep, he pulls an Alda. That's what it's known in the industry, actually. It's called the Alda.
Yeah, it's an Alda.
Pulling an Alda. They shoot him to death. Everybody's happy. Case closed. Good guys win. Ta-da.
And the song Bad Boys plays,
of course,
assume.
Yeah. It does, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's the film.
So, I want to start off by... I set a goalpost right at the beginning.
Okay.
Which is the fact that they rob the police station, which is already, man, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they rob the police station easily through like giant vents, which even they comment is a bad design.
Yeah.
But
it's
the goalpost,
it's clearly an old building too.
Yeah. So they steal the drugs,
mm-hmm.
and then they go to sell the drugs. And basically Joey Pants is like, you know, this was your case, go solve it.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is get the drugs back and arrest the guys.
Before it hits the news. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Is they don't want it. The captain's real anxious about it hitting the news. Mark Helgenberger shows up as like a real pain in the ass, I think, Internal Affairs lieutenant.
I think so.
She's like, I'm going to take this case away from you guys if you can't solve it within like the next couple of days, because this is a media circus. It's going to be a huge black eye for the department.
So they don't do those things though, right?
What's that?
Blow up the drugs and the money and the bad guys.
Well, I mean, I thought we were going to get to that, but yes, in true work.
I just thought it's the biggest thing.
Well, it's in true worst cops ever fashion. They kill all of the suspects and destroy all of the evidence.
Yeah. They fail very badly.
Yes. Bizarrely, this is the most by the book they get. Again, in true worst cops ever fashion, the first film is the film in which they're the most responsible in terms of actually being law enforcement officers.
Yes. I think much like we talked about in the Lethal Weapon series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of fault to be had on the entire Miami PD. Joey Pants specifically.
Yeah.
He's a maniac. He spends both of these films. I believe in both of these films, there's a scene where Joey Pants gets real intense and in their face, and he says, do whatever you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever. Whatever you have to do.
It's like a hand wave thing to give them carte blanche, because it's like, yeah, they always present him as perpetually having his back against the wall because I've got so much brass up my ass, I could play the Star Spangled Banner. Like, that's a line he says.
It's almost the opposite of the Lethal Weapon, where like, yeah, it's weird. Like they seem like they're constantly struggling to get any help. Which appears to be the theme of this, where they don't, like, when one of them is away, they don't know what to do. Like, they don't get backup. They don't even get a second cop when there's only one of them. They're like soul bonded.
Well, we'll discuss that. But yeah, they're sort of crap. Okay. They're sort of crap on their own. Like, they can't get anything done by themselves. They need to be each. They're a dyad, you see.
Yeah.
So right away, just real quick, this is sort of like worst thieves ever. I'm going to have one or two bits of that.
Yes, these carjackers are amazing.
Well, the carjackers are incredible, one of whom is Kim Coates, beloved character actor Kim Coates.
Oh.
Yeah, from The Client, Waterworld. Oh. He's the crazy guy that Kevin Costner sells the women to in Waterworld.
I knew him from something. It's Waterworld. That's, yeah.
Battlefield Earth.
You're talking about the stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah, the failed comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the guy that murders Anthony LaPaglia in the end of The Client.
Yeah.
He's one of the two goons.
Good. That's some good character acting.
Yeah, he's the guy that chases Brad Renfro through the hospital.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
These carjackers go after them in the middle of the day.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of when it happens.
Yeah, I guess.
I had a friend get carjacked at like 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, all right.
It kind of doesn't matter. It's just sort of like who's around and what part of town you're in.
Yeah. They use a honeypot distraction.
Sure.
Which works.
Right, because Mike, Will Smith is, yeah.
He's got boners. Yeah, he's got boners.
He's just carrying around a sack of boners with him wherever he goes. Mm-hmm. A sack of boners and silk shirts.
Yes.
That's how Mike operates.
We get to see.
Go ahead. Because my worst thieves ever thing actually wasn't about these guys. So I'm very delighted to hear what you have to say.
I mean, what I really just wanted to say is this opening scene mm-hmm. really establishes how unhinged they are from the start.
Yeah, it really does.
Because they get in an argument with guns pointed to their face, and you know, like, oh, okay, this is how it's going to go for the rest of the series.
They're sort of leaning into it to rope-a-dope them, which they do a few times in the series.
They do a lot, yeah. But they also, in order to do that, they seem to have some inherent, like...
Yeah, they've got
immunity.
Beef.
They do not fear death.
No, they definitely don't.
They don't fear death. And that's a regular theme throughout.
Well, Marcus does.
Yeah,
until he doesn't. Yeah, until he doesn't.
Like when shit goes down, when shit gets real, the thought of death just doesn't occur to them anymore.
That's. Yeah, I think that's maybe a little believable. Because it's like when you're in it, you're just like, you just do it. Like, that's kind of like Marcus. Marcus is the one who, like, after shit goes down, he's like, oh my God, that was crazy. And will like hyperventilate and be like, I got to sit down. Holy fuck, I almost died. Mike's just like, yeah whatever.
I mean, no, it's like bravery. But the difference is that they are often, I mean, we'll get to it, the aggressors.
Almost always.
Yes.
Not in the first half of the, it's weird watching.
Not
this,
in the first half. In the I first think Joey half, Pants is the lunatic in the first half.
Oh yeah, Joey Pants is definitely out of his mind in the first half of this. Like for the first half of watching this movie, I was a little worried. I was like, man, are we gonna have enough material? And then shit goes off the rails. So,
So what was your worst criminals?
When the guys break into the police station, it shows them freezing the padlock, like the bolt lock on the cage that has the heroin in it. They spray it down with liquid nitrogen, this bolt lock, this chain padlock, and then smash the frozen chain padlock with a pair of bolt cutters.
Oh yeah.
It's like, guys,
just use the bolt cutters.
That's what they're for. It will cut through that chain, I guarantee it.
It's right there in the name.
Yeah, we didn't need to get all Terminator 2 on this shit.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't matter because they get in, they get out, they break. Again, this movie establishes these guys are unhinged and the cops they work for are incompetent because they get robbed.
Yeah.
Like that's the drama. That's the stakes of this movie is we got robbed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to find who they are before we get in trouble for this.
Before we look really dumb.
Yeah.
And then
in the end, they just kill everybody.
That's the conflict. And then, of course, Will Smith's friend gets murdered, but he like doesn't mention her at all.
Yes.
Like we have Julie Taglioni there who keeps commenting on Max and Max's killer and everything. And that's what she really cares about. But Will Smith doesn't seem to give a shit whatsoever.
Well, she does all the fucking work for him. She breaks the case because he goes to her and he says, hey, you know, you're a call girl.
She's not though. Oh wait, no, Max she's is. Not, yeah, Max is.
Max, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And he's like, if there's any guys like throwing around money, let me know. And then she goes to the doctor from House and who plays the madam
mm-hmm.
and is like, do you have
Was that Cuddy? Was that Cuddy from House?
It's Cuddy.
I'm pretty sure. I didn't recognize her if it was.
Oh yeah. Cuddy shows up in the 90s. I'm almost certain that's Cuddy.
Oh, Cuddy.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then she's like, he tells her, like, look, just if you hear anything. But she apparently wants to fuck him so bad that she becomes like a junior detective.
Yeah,
and
she
goes to Cuddy and is just like, hey, is there anybody? Yeah, and she goes in to the, like, into more or less investigate this guy, which.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not, I don't want to blame her for getting murdered. But her cop friend basically was like, I'm looking for dangerous men who are like this. And she was like, okay, these look like the guys. I'm going to bring my friend along.
My friend, yeah.
Like, it's very responsible.
Yeah, they never explain why she does that. Like, why she brings Taleone along. It's just
because
the madam suggests it. Yeah, Cuddy suggests it.
She basically says, like, well, I got a thing tonight with my friend. And Cuddy's like, well, bring her along. And then she's like, yeah, okay.
Sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. It's weird.
It is a little strange.
It's almost as if the director didn't understand women.
It's as if, yeah.
Yeah.
So my first big note is when they go, they find out that the guy who built the shitty ventilation system, like, lives nearby, and they
he's got the rich guy house,
and they clearly had blueprints. The thieves clearly had blueprints to navigate that ventilation system. So they go to visit him, and they enter his house without a warrant or without probable cause. But that's like really
100%.
It's really minor because
it becomes less minor in the sequel.
Well,
it's a habit.
We'll talk about that when we get to the sequel. But in the context of this movie, they just sort of walk in because the door is unlocked after they don't hear anything, and then they immediately smell a dead body, and the guy has been fucking murdered in his
right.
office.
They smell a rotting corpse, and they take out their guns. It could be like a dead dog.
It could be.
I mean, they're proven to be right. But it doesn't excuse the fact that they do break into someone's house.
They do, yeah.
And then whip out their guns when they smell something.
Yeah. I will say that
that's... It is minor.
It's minor because it's also, especially since they find a dead body, that's kind of an easy thing. They can just be like, oh, we knocked and nobody answered, and then we smelled something that smelled like a corpse, so we tried the door and it was unlocked. Or they could be like, we saw the corpse from the window, and then there's probable cause. So it's pretty it's pretty minor, but at least
what they do next,
is Marcus is immediately trying to call homicide because they're narcotics detectives, but like Mike starts bullying him because he's getting sick around smelling the body and starts fucking with the crime scene, like moving the body and rifling through the papers on the desk and shit.
Just covering it with his fingerprints and DNA.
Fingerprints and DNA. Yep, he just immediately contaminates the crime scene.
This is one of those things they don't ever do is investigate.
Not really, no.
Like there could be, like, they should have called homicide. Homicide could have come. They could have gotten forensic people. They could have figured out, like, oh, yeah, who's touched the door handle.
Yeah, could have gotten some,
like,
fingerprints, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot that could have been done. And I don't want to skip ahead, but spoilers for Breaking This Case. At this point, they could break the case at any moment, because the thing that breaks the case is, like, right there in front of them for the whole movie, I believe.
What are you talking about?
Oh, wait, maybe not. It's the secretary lady.
Oh, yes, yeah, she's...
Yeah, all they have to do is trace the call,
mm-hmm.
The number that she gives them. And so none of this matters is what I'm saying. Ultimately.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they find out that the front desk sergeant, I guess, has been leaking them information. And they even say, like, some calls were made from the police station to this number or whatever. So they just need to, like, figure out who was working. And, like, she's being very suspicious about not being able to open one of the guy's files. And it turns out it was an ex-boyfriend of hers. And they had, like, intimidated her into giving them information. But yeah, you're right. It's like right there if they'd bothered to think about it.
Oh, can I back up for a second?
Yep.
Because I saw another similarity between this and Lethal Weapon,
mm-hmm.
which is Lethal Weapon opens when they establish Murtaugh's character,
yeah,
it's like a really weird, creepy bath scene with his family.
Yes.
That's how it opens. Martin Lawrence's character, he gets jumped on by children while he has an erection.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's rock hard, like, ready to fuck.
Yeah. It's just weird that both of these movies are like, let's introduce one character in like a kind of weird way. Yeah, he brags about his erection, talks about it, and then kids run in and jump on him, and it was like, gross.
Mm-hmm.
Gross movie. Sorry, that's all I had.
No problem. I mean, I'm not sure it's like weird. I think they probably deliberately are echoing Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So.
He is, we learned about both of these Bad Boys movies, Marcus's dick is a big part of them.
Mm-hmm. Marcus's inability to bone.
Yes. Yeah. The both, yeah.
And then Will Smith's character being like a samurai of boning.
Yes. Yeah, that's in both.
Yeah, it's in both
also,
films.
Yeah, respecting property
yeah.
is also a big theme of this.
Yeah. Worst thieves ever. When Fouché and the rest of his goons show up at Eddie, who is the shitty ex-cop that got them inside, when they show up at his party to kill Max, Fouché holds a pillow in front of his gun to shoot her for some
yes.
reason, because it does absolutely nothing to lessen the noise of the firing.
Well,
and then she crashes through a glass table. Then he shoots Eddie in the leg without any kind of suppression. And then his goons shoot Eddie like two or three times without any kind of suppression. So it was like, why'd you bother with the pillow, you lunatic?
And then when Tia Leone makes noise, they fire wildly
yes, yeah.
at her. They don't even know who she is at that point. Everything about this scene, because then it becomes a crime scene, because it's like a hotel.
It's the Biltmore.
Yeah. So I...
There's people was, there.
Yeah. At first I thought it was like his private villa,
mm-mm.
but he's just in a hotel. He's having a cocaine party. Is it cocaine or is it
heroin? It's
heroin. He's having a heroin party in the middle of the day. Like, it's like one in the afternoon.
Well, it's evening.
It's light out.
Well, it's dark when Tay Leone jumps out the window.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. That's all right. And he's just like loudly running around. Yeah. Inviting these, like, they're all clowns. And I would argue in both of the Bad Boys movies, the villains are kind of all clowns.
Yeah. They're big time idiots.
And maybe this is a Michael Bay thing, but I would extend that to say every character is a maniac.
Kind of.
In all
yeah.
of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody does just wild, wild decisions.
The next time they see the captain, like, he's like, yeah, you're fine. Look, when they show up at the Biltmore, he's like, you're finally here. So it's like every time they see the captain, it seems like they're perpetually late.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Mike and Marcus just can't be bothered to get to crime scenes on time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, that's true. It's hard when you're driving a $150,000 sports car to be on time.
Exactly. It's at this point that they could wrap up the case if they wanted, because they find the dead guy, and that dead guy, all you had to do is open his file, but she's not opening it for them.
Right.
So she's the one thing in the way. But if they were like, look, we really need to see in that file. A lot of this police work could have been easily done by just slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Like that last crime scene, just like prints, you know, getting prints, figuring it out. They don't do any of that. They don't. When they go to arrest people in this movie, they just show up, just the two of them.
Yes.
Whatever time of day it is.
Mm-hmm.
They can't wait a second.
Nope.
To do anything.
No. Listen, man, they only have 72 hours or something.
Yeah,
before,
I guess.
Before the story hits the papers and they all look dumb.
Right.
Marcus is on the phone with his wife at the same time he's on the phone with somebody else he's trying to get to break into Eddie's personnel files.
Oh, yeah. It's and like, he, like, calls her a name.
Well, inadvertently, because he's yelling at the other guy on the other phone. But
yeah.
It's like, you're doing, like, sensitive police shit while you're speaking to your wife.
Right. Also, I highly, like, his wife thinks he's, like, fucking around on her. And he's so oddly, like, deceptive all the time. Like, he doesn't just explain to her what's happening.
Right, he doesn't just tell her, I was on the phone with another guy.
Yeah, he acts like someone who is guilty.
Yes.
Constantly.
Yes.
And, like, all he has to do is just tell her what's happening.
Right. He could have, rather than making up an elaborate story about going to Cleveland, he could have just said, look, we have this material witness. I have to, like, sit with them in police custody for the next couple of days.
Right. But they appear to have no... we'll get to it. They seem to have no resources again, which is really weird, like... Everything's so personal. They have to drive everywhere. They don't bring backup. They just go on their own. Because the next thing that happens is Mike goes in the middle of the night to see the madam. And it's like, get some sleep. Go to... Like, you're on the clock. It's a job. You can't be doing this for every case.
Well, like, his friend just got murdered.
Yeah. Well, then bring a couple cops. Like, he requests backup when he gets there.
Right. And I wanted to highlight that because I feel like that's a series first in this podcast where he
requesting backup.
Right. He shows up and he actually radios for backup. Like, he's like, oh, right, shit, somebody's broken in here.
But he doesn't wait for it.
No, he doesn't. He goes in and gets sledgehammered. He gets Peter Gabriel'd right out of a window.
He really does. Where did his backup go? Did they never find him?
I mean, they show up, and I guess it's, like, assumed that he, like, was getting treated overnight and stuff for getting sledgehammered.
Yeah, okay, that checks out.
The fact that the captain, Joey Pants...
No.
Go ahead.
Hold on, because they don't know where he is.
The captain doesn't, and Marcus doesn't.
Right, so if he went to the hospital that night, they would find out.
Right.
Because they're looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
So the backup must have shown up, looked around and been like, well, I don't see anything in front of me, so let's go.
Maybe he gets dropped off at the police station the next morning in the backseat of a cop car, so I assume that was the backup that showed up, but I don't know. He loses some time, yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Several hours. So the captain basically forces them to engage in some weird conspiracy where Marcus pretends to be Mike in order to coerce this witness into speaking with them. That's some wild shit.
Yes.
Like,
it's very illegal.
Like, Tay Leone could sue the city for millions of dollars.
Yeah. And this is why I feel like the captain is, of these three characters, the worst of them.
In this movie,
he orders
absolutely,
them,
yeah.
I think in the next one, because he orders them and enables them to do some wild shit and screams at them and says, do whatever you have to do, whatever you have to do. And then, like, throws them under the bus when they're when they do whatever they have to do and doesn't give them backup. Or, like, and, like, in this case, like, what happens is Marcus goes and picks up Tia Leone, gets in a gunfight because he doesn't bring anybody. And then brings her to Mike's place, and it's like, just take her in. Just take her into the station.
Well, she says, I don't want to go to the station. If you take me to the station, I'll develop a case of amnesia. Because he threatens to arrest her for interfering with an investigation.
But do cops do that?
I don't know.
Like, if a witness says... Like, it seems like, no matter what she says, it's like, no, we're not taking you to this guy's house.
Yeah. No, fuck that. No,
you're a
it's,
witness.
Right, it's ludicrous.
We're
going
to take you into the station.
Right. Or they could have been like, we'll take you to a safe house. But, yeah, it's a ludicrous premise. Because her thing is like, no, I don't want to go there because that one of those guys was a cop. How she knew he was a cop, I have no idea.
Right. And he says to her he's an ex-cop. And then by the time she meets Mike, who she thinks is Marcus, she's working with both cops at that point. Again, just take her in.
Right, because she's like, well, I only go to your house. I don't want to go to a police station because there's a cop that did it. It's like, dude, the cops know where Mike lives. Like, they have his at. You're not any safer there if your reasoning is you don't want cops to know where you are.
Right, and I get maybe, like, that night she's scared, but once it all settles down, and at any point they could just say, look, we lied. This is actually Mike, and I'm Marcus. We're taking you in. But they, like, keep it going for days.
Yep. Several days.
Under orders. They're being ordered to
do this.
Right,
yeah, they're being instructed to do this. when the criminals show up at Julie's apartment and Marcus gets into a gunfight, this is another worst criminals ever.
The henchmen?
Yeah, the henchmen are there to like discreetly murder her. First of all, they discreetly murder the madam with a sledgehammer. It's like, yeah. What, you psychopath? Like,
these henchmen are something else.
And then this these three goons come to Julie's apartment and just immediately blast the door in half with the Muldoon shotgun.
Yeah.
It's like, my and then, God.
I love that it was like the one weird old henchman.
Right.
That they're like giving shit to.
Right, because
like,
he's
old. You fat bastard.
You fat piece of shit. He's like, I'm 55.
Yeah, what is that guy doing? Can he not get another job?
Probably not. I don't know. Maybe
should be able to retire at this point. If he's a henchman...
It seems, and like in the Biltmore when they just open fire on Julie from the bottom floor, not being able to see who she is. Right. It's like they have rabies or something. They're just like...
They're out of control.
They're attacking with maximum violence.
Yes, but they're very sloppy.
Yeah. Like the sledgehammer blows me away. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
That he's
that
like,
sounds exhausting.
He wants you to go kill this madam. He's like, well, I'm going to go get my 10-pound sledge.
Yeah. Imagine killing someone with a sledgehammer. That is hard. That's exhausting. Because here's the thing.
Not if you surprise them. That's one swing, buddy.
Oh, I just mean in general. Like, if that's your thing, you're doing that all night.
That's true, yeah.
Like, first of all, yeah, you have to surprise them every time. But then... If you don't surprise them and you accidentally hit them like the tummy, like, yeah, they'll be down, but then you have to keep swinging. And every single time it's like chopping wood.
Yeah.
Like, you ever try to chop wood for a while? Like, that's the worst weapon.
I've broken up concrete with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Like, I've done that for like a day.
Yeah, that guy locked himself into
It's not like an easy thing to do. Yeah, it's like exhausting. Yeah. So it's just like, man, he just must be a dark, dark man.
Yeah.
When Marcus gets into that shootout with the guys, they do so through the patio of a restaurant.
Yep.
Just with people sitting there eating dinner.
A lot of bystanders in this series.
I mean, the thug starts the gunfight, but still.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of moments like that later in this movie and the next where cops... And this is the same with the lethal weapons, is that I don't think cops will chase someone down the street or in a car if that person starts to become, it becomes dangerous, right?
They're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to. And they do that all the time in this. They're like Terminators
sure
in this. They don't stop chasing.
Nope.
It doesn't matter what's happening.
Marcus threatens Chet the doorman into giving him the keys to Mike's apartment.
Yeah, and he hurts his hand. That's assault.
Yeah, he twists his hand into doing it. And then when he gets upstairs, he trips over Marcus's like riser over Mike's riser and falls, and his gun flies out because he's been carrying it stuffed in the back of his pants.
Yeah.
It's like, you're a police officer. you have a holster.
The bad guys, the bad guys saw his license plate, right?
I'm not sure. He says to himself, I know they got to look at my license plate.
Right. And that's why Mike goes to his wife's house and his family's house and all that.
Yes.
What you're pointing out is why, and Joey Pants says this in the second one, there's a good reason they drive police cars and wear uniforms, and they don't do that in this. And if they had police cars, none of this would have been an issue.
That's true. Yeah.
Because the license plates wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. Lord knows why he drove his family station wagon to pick Julie up. Just drive a police car, man.
With no backup.
Well, she told them she would only speak to him. So
have a guy outside. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, it just seems like, I don't think, again, if I like witnessed a murder and I called the cops and I was like, I'll only speak to this guy, the cops aren't going to fucking, like, they're not going to honor that, are they? No,
they'll just
come to my house. She gives her address, they'll just send the cops over. It's just so weird how like powerless they are.
They just sort of drift along. Like, well, I guess we're doing this now.
You know, like, well, she said so, this witness.
No, I guess we gotta do what she says.
This witness who doesn't matter if they would just, like, go through the crime scenes better. Who also, I don't understand why the bad guys are after her.
Because she can incriminate them.
Right, but that doesn't seem to matter, does it?
I don't see why it doesn't.
Well, we'll get to that. Because it feels like she incriminates them in the club hell, but they still don't catch him.
Well, she points out one guy that she recognized from the mugshot, but they end up killing that guy.
Right.
Because they're terrible at their jobs. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay, we'll get there.
All right.
We'll get
all right. Mike shows up at the police station the next morning with a concussion, but he's still in an active investigation. Seems like maybe he shouldn't be.
Oh, yeah, no, he should be taken. Also, his friend died. It's personal. His family, and Marcus's family is threatened.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, these are the only two cops they can have on this.
When they get to Club Hell. Okay, so Julie picks a guy out of a lineup that she recognizes. They learn that he hangs out at this place called Club Hell, which I think is also used in The Punisher with Thomas Jane and John Travolta.
Yeah, that checks out.
So, what's that?
So just right away, she points him out. They know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Just call backup and go to his house.
Just go arrest him. Yeah.
Just go arrest him.
Let's go arrest him.
Like, don't go to the club. Like, I guess you could go to the club, but, like, go to his, where he lives, right? That's how cops arrest people?
Normally.
Yeah.
Unless they can't find him.
Wait for the next day and just go to his house and arrest him. But if they're going to go to the club, don't just be two of them. Bring some cops in uniforms.
Right. Don't go in the middle of the night.
Treat it like an arrest.
Yeah. This is what baffles me about the Club Hell scene. So they show up at Club Hell. Mike and Marcus split up to try to find Noah in the crowd, who is like a dangerous criminal involved in this murder and then this huge drug heist. And Marcus immediately goes to the bathroom while Mike is flirting with the dancers and drinking at the bar.
Right. They're just like, scope it out.
Right.
And it's like, but you're not at a stakeout. You're there to arrest somebody.
Yeah, they don't know for sure he's there, so I guess they're looking for him and they don't want to tip him off. But that goes out the window because Marcus gets attacked by two guys in the bathroom trying to kill him. He subdues them both but does not arrest them.
No, he doesn't.
They're clearly involved, and he doesn't arrest them. He's like, I'll be back for you guys. Like, no, fuck it. Arrest these guys. Yes. They probably know something too.
This is what I'm saying is it's like they forget they're cops, and it's like the police station has no resources. Like, it feels like they're completely on their own, and like they can't arrest him because he's like, I have other things to do.
Yeah.
Like, I have to leave you there. What do I do? Call other cops to come here? No.
No, that's ridiculous.
It's just us. We're on their own. When one of us disappears overnight, it's just the one of us then. Like, they seem to not know, even more so than the Lethal Weapons, they seem to not know they're cops in some scenes. Like, they forget. Because this scene ends with them getting chased.
Yes. Well,
and even Tio Leone says, you're cops.
Why are you running?
Why are you running?
It's after they let an important witness open fire in this nightclub with one of Mike's guns that she took from his apartment. Causes a huge panic where people are like running over each other to get out of the club.
I forgot about this. That's also a big thing is they don't know Tio Leone.
Nope.
And they just let her be in Mike's house with apparently his guns.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think cops would ever do this.
No.
Right?
No.
For a lot of reasons. She could just rob him and sell his shit for drugs. Like, they don't know her. She's a witness to a crime. Like, you don't let them live in your apartment.
No.
Yeah. It's very bad. They do a very bad job.
You also don't leave them unsupervised.
No, yeah, you don't do any of that.
So they leave
with a gun,
right? With several guns that are unlocked. They flee the scene in a truck that they just steal.
Yeah, they hijack a truck at gunpoint.
High speed chase through Miami, firing their guns into the street and throwing barrels of ether onto the road and then shooting them so they blow up.
Yep. They're just throwing ether on the highway in a demolish a construction site.
Yep.
They were, just for the record, all they were there to do is make an arrest.
Yep. They were there to arrest one guy.
And they are now being chased down the highway throwing barrels of ether. Like video game villains.
Right, chucking barrel bombs into traffic.
Yeah, like they're the villains in a Time Crisis game.
Exactly, yeah.
Just, yeah, it's ridiculous. Just go with some uniforms. Go with, like, five guys.
Get a helicopter,
go into the
maybe,
nightclub.
I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, go to the nightclub, tell them to shut off the music, and, like, just go arrest the guy. And again, and she identifies more people there. Like, all they had to do at that moment, because the main villain's there.
Yeah, they're just all of them are there. They're all hanging out upstairs in the VIP lounge.
They have probable cause, right? She identified one of them.
Yes.
They would probably be able to match the prints or of a couple more, like, in that architect crime scene. They might not be able to get anything on the main guy, but, like, it's a start, right?
Yeah. They blow up their prime suspect, the only suspect they have, and then they go to a convenience store.
Yeah, they sure do.
Like, they're still, like, no paperwork? You're not going to go back to the, you're going to go to a convenience store to buy shampoo for the witness?
Yeah.
Like, what are
they
you
don't go back.
Doing?
Again, it's like they're not cops. That's very similar to the Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon where he goes on that date, gets chased by a helicopter.
Yeah, and then just goes home.
And then just, yeah, it's like, no, there's shit to do. You just got in a very, like a high-speed chase with a lot of explosions. Did you not even stay at the crime scene?
Nope, they just go home. Like
they just fleed the crime scene.
Yep. After throwing barrel bombs under the highway, blowing up a car with two people inside of it.
Yeah, they're just like, let's go buy you some shampoo.
And then leaving two guys that tried to kill Marcus on the floor of a bathroom in a nightclub.
Right.
They do not follow up at all.
Yeah, they don't. I guess we'll get to it, but this is good setting it up. Is the second bad boys, the villains think they're not cops. And I can see why.
Right. Why would you ever think? I mean, in this scene.
They don't act like cops.
In this scene, the convenience store clerk doesn't believe they're cops. So he pulls a gun on them.
Right. And he becomes the weird Michael Bay stereotype.
Right.
He says, freeze, mother bitches.
Mother bitch. And then he says, I'll blow you. It's like, no, nobody talks like that.
No. Come on, Michael Bay.
Yeah, what are you doing, man?
And then they pull their guns on him.
Yep.
And I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
They do this. It's the equivalent of the bad guy putting up his gun at the end. Is they wanted this scene for some reason. They wanted this scene to happen. And so they needed the clerk to be a maniac aggressor.
Well, he's probably been robbed a bunch.
Yeah. He probably has PTSD.
Yeah.
And two guys dressed without uniforms and guns are talking about heroin.
Yeah. So the next thing that I have written is when Marcus overhears a conversation that Mike and his wife are having that
he thinks it's sex talk.
Right, he thinks they're boning. So he drags Julie, their witness, out of custody, handcuffs her to the steering wheel, drives her to his own house, and leaves her there alone so he can creep up on his own house and spy on it.
Yes.
And,
well, first
and
of all,
the bad guys are there.
Who answers if they were fucking around? Mike and Marcus's wife. I forget her character's name.
Teresa, which is the same name as
Teresa.
The actress.
Oh, they wouldn't pick up the phone saying sex stuff.
Right.
Very silly.
If you're boning somebody you're not supposed to be boning and their phone rings, you wouldn't answer the phone and in the middle of you saying, "Oh my God, we're fucking."
Yeah, but whatever. It's silly.
It's fun. It's like I said. It's a farce.
It's a sitcom. But yeah, this begins the era, the point in the movie where they just start handcuffing Tia Leone to car steering wheels.
Yep.
Because again, They should have brought her in. Yeah. Instead, they didn't, and now they're treating her like a cat that's going to escape at any point.
Right,
they're just handcuffing her. This is all very illegal.
They're treating her like Leo in Lethal Weapon 2. they're just dragging her around everywhere they go. It's like this important witness.
They are lucky that she likes them and wants to do this, because otherwise she could... a major lawsuit. In fact, we don't know. There probably was a major lawsuit after this movie
probably
concludes.
Yeah. So after this point,
then the bad guys are there for some reason. It's very lucky.
Yeah, the bad guys have identified. I guess they spot Marcus in the club, and one of the thugs recognizes him. That's why they try to kill him in the bathroom. So they find out who he is, and they go to his house, and they're watching it. And then
wait, so they didn't get his plates?
I don't know if they did or not.
Yeah. So like that again, the club hell thing is, it's so irresponsible what they did.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Then the
'cause they
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. They kind of create this situation for themselves where it's personal, because again, they don't just go in with uniformed cops. They don't go by the book. They go into these places, call people motherfucker, and like beat them up and then don't arrest them and
right,
leave.
Like Marcus,
and it's like
Marcus goes to the club wearing like a red denim vest and a tank top.
Right. And it's like, of course they're going to go to your house. You didn't arrest them. You just beat them up and left.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they might not even know you're cops.
So what's the next thing I had written? Okay. The next thing I've written is when they go to visit Jojo the Tire Man, Michael Imperioli.
Fucking Christopher. Poor Christopher.
Poor Christopher. And then Mike pulls two guns and puts them in Jojo's face and is like, I will kill you unless you tell me something about this heroin shipment. Because their reasoning is, they visited Jojo earlier. He used to be... He's a chemist.
He seemed sketchy.
Yeah, yeah. He's a chemist. He used to cut drugs. But he's a tire salesman now. But they reason that's too much heroin that's been stolen. There was a truck full of ether. That's too much product for him just to not to have heard anything. So they go to his tire shop, and then Mike threatens to blow his head off unless he tells him something.
Just intimidation.
And then he threatens to shoot Marcus. They do this whole thing, and then Joe just like, okay, I there's this one chemist I know who happens to be Kevin Corrigan.
Right. It won't be the last time.
No.
Mike points his gun at Marcus.
Nope.
They just do that for fun. Is this where the boat thing happens? Because the boat thing is hilarious to me. Is they bring Tia Leone, they handcuff her again, they bring her to go scope out the bad guy's boat,
mm-hmm.
and they think they're being real sneaky. And then it cuts to the bad guy just watching them,
staring at them through binoculars.
Yeah, and then, like, yeah, there they are.
And then she's like, I want to look. And they're like, well, what the fuck are you talking about? Mark is like, this isn't Charlie's Angels. This is real cop stuff. And then Mike says, it can't hurt for her to take a peek. And the first thing that happens is she peeks over with the binoculars, and fucking Fouché, who's just standing there like an owl with his binoculars, spots all three of them.
It's like, yep, there they are.
So they follow them back to Mike's apartment, where they get into a huge shootout in the lobby, kill a random bystander, and abduct Julie.
Right, and we talked about this with Leo Getz in Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone that you're supposed to put in protective custody, you don't bring them along to go look at the bad guys that they're supposed to name later.
Right.
Like, they put a big target on their head, mm-hmm. and then they basically are able, because if they had just seen the cops, they wouldn't necessarily know she was with them.
Correct.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have to go to their houses, but that's what they do, and they have that lobby gunfight, which is hilarious because not a single person gets shot,
except for a random bystander.
Right. Despite them being like 3 feet away from each other when they pull out
right.
their guns.
They're 3 feet apart, and there's like seven guns in the scene because like Fouché has two. One of the guys has a Tech 9. Like, it's
no
absurd.
One can shoot in this movie.
A lot of slow motion. Maybe they were all in bullet time and were able to dodge
it. Right. Yeah, that's true. Because like the henchmen earlier, they shoot at Tia Leoni and they can't hit shit.
Yeah.
Like it's just very, it's very silly.
They're very stormtroopery.
Yeah.
This lobby shootout abduction becomes a huge car chase in which they wreck several civilian cars.
Is this where he jumps on a taxi?
He jumps on a taxi after Fouché murders the cab driver. So this is already like numerous deaths and injuries they've caused by letting Tay Leone right. take a peek with the binoculars.
Yeah.
This can all be directly tied to that.
Right.
And they're just shooting, and like they crash through like an elderly lady's hair salon. They knock over a bunch of like paraplegic basketball players. Paraplegic,
I think so.
Paraplegic is two leg. It's two, right? Yeah, that's right. Because quad is four. Okay, yeah. So it's like a like the murder ball guys, like the wheelchair basketball guys just happen to be running down the sidewalk. So it's like,
yeah, they just tackle them.
Right. They have Fouché like terrorize old women and some people in wheelchairs. Like they just have him do like the most evil things you can do in the span of like 5 seconds.
Just kicking puppies.
Right.
Left
the only,
right.
Yeah. The only thing he doesn't do is like tear through a kindergarten and kick kids yeah. in the stomach at this point. Yeah, it's just a lot of mayhem they caused because Mike was like, it can't hurt for her to take a peek. It does, Mike. It does hurt
it
for
does.
Her to take a peek.
It's madness. I have a question.
Yeah.
Because then they kidnap Tia Leone, mm-hmm. and they say something like, they just took our only witness. What are we going to do?
You guys
now,
are both. You guys are witnesses. Chet's now
that's
a witness.
That's what I was about to say.
Marcus's wife is now a witness, for crying out loud.
Haven't they been witnesses since Club Hell?
Yes.
Like they again, after Club Hell, they can just arrest them.
Well, Marcus doesn't ever make an attempt to try to ID the two guys that attacked him in the bathroom.
Yeah, they could be arresting them right away. They're like scoping out the boat. Like it's like they're not allowed to go just arrest them. Just go arrest them. They don't have diplomatic immunity. Just go arrest these people. They've been shooting at you.
Yeah. One of the guys.
And yeah, they're like, damn, that was our only witness. And it's like, you've witnessed them doing more.
Yeah.
Way, way more.
My God.
Just go arrest him. Just go arrest him.
Well, after that, the captain... They go back to the police station, tell them what's happened, and then Mark Helgenberger comes in, and she's like, all right, you guys are fucking this up. Like, you guys are reassigned.
Right.
Which, yes. Fair.
fair assessment. But kind of insane.
Right.
Because she doesn't... It's not like... At this point in the movie, usually, like, the FBI rolls in. They're like, we'll take it from here. They don't do that. She just walks in and goes, you're done with the case, and leaves, and it's like, wait... But she just got kidnapped. Is someone taking over? Because they don't give it to somebody else. They just sort of fire them from the case.
Well, as far as she's just talking to them, so she may be off
true.
To give it to other detectives. Either way, the reason I bring it up is because Joey Pants, Captain Joey Pants, immediately says, oh, fuck what she said. You guys go do this case anyway.
Right. Because Joey Pants is the reason. I think he has cultivated a police station full of maniacs.
Yes.
He is like a cult leader.
Mm-hmm. So they I forget how they track them to the airfield.
Because this is all right, this is where the solution is.
Okay.
Is they finally open the guy's file, the guy who they found at the beginning of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they find that the listed girlfriend, I don't know why the police have listed girlfriend in the file, but they do.
Well, they do.
And it, okay, if, and it's the lady.
Especially if he has a criminal history, which that guy did.
Oh, okay.
So they list like your known contacts and former partners and shit like that.
Okay. It's the cop lady. And then they interrogate her and she tearfully confesses that they took naughty pictures of her and we're going to like revenge porn her. For
well,
information?
Well, what they do is... naughty is a little derivative. She makes it really sound like they... I mean, they broke
that's
into her
true.
House,
she
terrorized
says,
her, and took horrible photos
of her.
Oh,
is that the idea? Because it was a boyfriend. I thought it was like... I don't know.
She said her ex. Like, so she... Like, her...
Oh,
so, like,
okay.
Eddie and Fouché broke into her house and forced her to take photographs and post them up on her kid's bulletin board at school if she didn't.
Unless she did this.
Right.
Yeah.
So she gives them, I think she gives them the plans and like
right,
something
but then
else.
They literally just, I guess this is what it comes down to, is they say, do you have a number that they called you at?
Yes. Yeah.
And she says, I do. And then they trace the number and that's how they get the guy.
Yep.
Now, again, couldn't they have done that with the henchmen at Club Hell?
They could have, but they blew him up.
Oh, you're right. I just, there's, they could have at least figured out who his associates are. It's just so silly because it all comes down to her being like, oh, I could give you this number to trace. And then they just are like, oh, there he is. There's the bad guy.
Well, she was deliberately obfuscating, though.
Right.
So I don't know how you get around that, because they mentioned that they're trying to get this guy Fletch, who is played by NBA legend John Sally.
Right. Here's my question. Mm-hmm. Is when they're in Club Hell, like, they see the bad guy up there. So they know that he hangs out there, too.
They don't know who the bad guy is, though.
Right. But they never make an attempt to figure that out based off that interaction. Like, they know he goes to that club now. They know he hangs out with that henchman. Mm-hmm. They never do any detective work.
No.
To just figure out who he is.
Well, like I said, Marcus never attempts to identify the two guys that attacked him, and one of them is one of the main henchmen.
Right, and that's why I think this is so funny, is because at the very end, they just finally get a phone number, something they probably could have got a long time ago if they had just done a little bit of detective work.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we can trace that. Like, they have to have this lady tell them through this crazy series of events.
Yep.
They're bad detectives.
Yes, they
are.
They are.
Yeah.
So they get to the airfield, which is like a situation where you need to, they're like, yeah, there's no time to wait for backup. The deal's happening now. And it's like a plane and like a bunch of like South American, heavily armed, warlord troops. Like,
and that one, the one henchman who says, you have sexy ears, I want to lick them.
Yeah, that's the guy that attacks Marcus in the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
My point is that it's loaded with dudes with automatic weapons, and there's all sorts of shit in there. This is like a city, like, you need to call like the National Guard for this shit.
Yes, and it's like just two of them.
No, well, they brought along the two Hispanic detectives.
Right. Because
whom with they trade racist barbs.
Yes. But this is, again, it feels like it's the police station has no resources, because when shit gets real, that's what happens. They always go to the two Hispanic police detectives and say, we need backup. And it's like, you can get more people than
there's
that.
There's more than just these two other guys. Yeah.
It really feels like they constantly forget that they're cops who have unlimited resources.
Well, not unlimited, but more resources than just them.
Yeah. I guess they haven't been. It's the 90s. We're not at the point where cops are getting SWAT equipment and military and being militarized. But, like, cops aren't known for, like, Miami cops aren't known for not having, you know, supplies and stuff.
Right.
And, like, extra people. Like, this is a big deal. And they bring four people.
Yep.
Four cops.
And they drive into the middle of this fucking paramilitary drug deal with a garbage truck.
They sure do. There's a hostage, and they drive into the building.
Yep, they drive into this hangar with a garbage truck.
They could have creamed her. They could have just,
yep,
just smeared her on the floor with their truck.
And they just start shooting. Like, they drive in there and just start shooting. They don't know where she is in the building. fucking, there's a million explosions. The whole hangar ends up exploding because of all the ether to cut the drugs.
Yeah.
So, again, like we mentioned at the top of the episode, in true Worst Cops Ever fashion, they kill all of the suspects and they blow up all of the drugs and money.
Yep. And then they're like, we won.
Yeah.
But the news found out about
justice.
Right. The ether part, they're on the news.
Yeah, you would be on the news for driving an ice cream truck down the freeway and throwing barrel bombs out of it.
So they didn't save face.
Nope.
They didn't get the drugs back.
Nope.
And they didn't arrest anybody.
Nope.
And they're just like, yeah, we did it.
Yeah, police work.
They killed everybody.
We killed them all. Well, that's not really what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. It is very bad
police
work.
This case is officially unsolved.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and all the evidence is like covered in their fingerprints and shit. And they didn't do anything by the book.
Nope.
They didn't call in any backup. It's just them. It's just them running around. Like, it's, and again, I think both of these movies have this, is like, you could easily rewrite the Bad Boys movies to not make them cops,
mm-hmm.
to make them like vigilantes, because they don't really use the power of being a cop
at all.
They do things illegally all the time.
Right. They use the fact that they're cops to avoid any accountability for all the carnage they cause.
Right, but if they had like a bat cave, a bad boy cave,
mm-hmm.
it would be no different. Like it's just very silly.
I want to see like Will Smith walk up to like the Batman vault in the bat cave where he keeps all his bat suits, and it's just like a rack of his silk purple suits.
Yeah. Oh hell
from
yeah.
From Bad Boys 2. That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
So yeah, I think that's
Bad Boys.
That's Bad Boys. That's Bad Boys, baby.
That is a retelling of Bad Boys. I think the big conclusion for me personally is the realization, because we talked about this with the Lethal Weapons. We talked about this with when we do Fox Mulder's A Maniac,
mm-hmm.
where it's like I've seen this movie 1,000 times.
Oh yeah, yeah. This was an early favorite of mine as a 12-year-old boy. I watched this movie.
Yes.
I've seen this movie probably 60 times.
Yeah, and I absolutely adore this film. But going through it from this lens, my biggest conclusion, what makes them different than like the Lethal Weapon cops,
mm-hmm.
is that one running theme that they seem to forget their cops. And they seem to don't seem to have resources
mm-hmm.
of cops.
Mm-hmm.
And their station seems just constantly under fire.
Yeah.
And like desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very weird. It's a weird universe where, like, cops are, like, real underdogs. Yeah. Where, like, they can't...
The Miami
they can't, like,
PD
do their job.
Is a real underdog.
Yeah, the Miami PD is an underdog. Yeah.
We went from the LA PD to the Miami PD. Like, oh, yeah. these up-and-comers,
right.
these rascals, I hope they...
Yeah.
These scrappy cops.
These poor cops.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah. It's very silly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
I love this movie.
It's the fucking best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
It's real dumb.
So I think that's a sode. I think we're done with this episode of Worst Cops Ever Part 2.
Yeah. Many, many thanks to John Ryman for making this all happen.
Making it come together.
Yeah, he did it through our Patreon, and if you're interested in our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts there, like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
All true.
Yeah, we have many tiers, one where you can produce your own podcast miniseries. We have several more coming out. You know, the Highlanders.
Mm-hmm.
We still have the Highlanders coming out, and then we have two new miniseries that you'll learn about. That'll be
shortly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And look out next week for us doing this for Bad Boys 2.
Yeah. The second episode of Worst Cops Ever 2.
Yeah.
You lucky ducks.
You are ducks.
Oh, yeah. We're in Miami. There's all this water.
Yeah.
Oh. What?
Sorry. One last thing. This movie and the next, they both have the famous Miami sign.
Which doesn't exist.
A sign that doesn't exist. Yeah. It is also in one of the Transporter films.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the weirdest part, that it crosses franchises despite not existing.
Yeah.
There is no Miami sign.
It does not exist.
I don't know why several filmmakers have decided there's a sign in Miami that planes fly over. It's not a thing.
I think they're all just copying that shot from this film.
Yeah, I guess so.
We also have a store, tpublic.com/stores/gamefullyunemployed. We can check out t-shirts, mugs, stickers, posters, all kinds of stuff from our shows and related jokes, inside jokes, and just shit that we think is funny in general. So check that out to have stuff that can be your stuff in your home.
Yeah, wear a shirt that confuses people.
Yep.
Confuse your neighbors and your family.
Baffle your friends. Astound your family.
Yeah, when they look at it, they'll be like, what? Yeah. And you can wiggle your head in front of them and go, are you freaked out yet? Do exactly that.
Yep.
Are you freaked out yet?
Go all Ricky Gervais on them.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, really trigger them.
Yeah. Go to our store to trigger the libs.
Trigger the libs. Fuck, it works for some other people.
It does, yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.